Are you tired of listening to German language all day long?
Don't you just want to get your news and topics presented in English, even though you live in Germany?
Then here's your solution.
Yeah! Elephant in the Room, an English radio show where we discuss things that people tend to ignore.
Tune in on Color Radio on 99.3 and 98.4. Every second and fourth Monday of the month.
Elephant in the Room, a radio show by the Black Rose Radio Collective from Dresden.
Hate Mondays. Be organized. Stay cool.
Hello, guys. We're back from Elephant in the Room, and today we brought you a topic that is maybe already familiar to you because we've talked about it a couple of weeks ago. For 2 months, people have been protesting now in the streets of Belarus. And on the 9th of August was an election, and Lukashenko hoped to be reelected again, as he has been for the past 5 election periods. But this didn't happen. And so the first time in his ruling period, the real results were published. But no surprise, Lukashenko didn't achieve 80% as he usually orders everybody to announce. And the real winner of the election was Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, who won the election. And she's a woman who stepped in running for the office of president after her husband had been detained because he originally was a presidential candidate himself. The situation exploded in several directions. People went on the streets, and the police answered with brutal police violence. 2 months ago, we already had a show which focused on the circumstances which led to this uprising. And today we want to give you an update and a review on the last 2 months of protest in Belarus.
Okay, people, this was a Russian punk band, E123. We hope everybody gets awake now, and now it gets serious as the music already kind of introduced. We have a guest today who will answer us a lot of questions about Belarus, as we already told you. So, hello.
Hello.
Since the elections, actually Sunday is becoming the protest day. So every Sunday there were for now big demonstrations in Minsk, but also in the regional cities. Maybe we start with what was going on yesterday.
Yesterday was Sunday, right? Sunday.
Exactly.
So on Sunday we've seen... No, let's move a little bit different way. So every Sunday since 2 months... there were calls to join the demonstrations against the regime. And actually the whole protest movement, let's say protest wave that started after elections started on Sunday. So Sunday has some kind of a symbolic, whatever you call it, symbolism. Symbolic symbolism for Belarusian symbols. So what was happening this Sunday was another day when everybody were called to join the demonstrations and so on and so forth. What changed since 2 months, in this last 2 months, is that if in the first weeks the demonstrations were happening in most of the cities, I mean, there were demonstrations in like 50, 60, 70 different cities around the country. Since then, police started using this kind of a growth of repression tactics. So first demonstrations were not actually attacked at all. And step by step, they were repressed. So most of the smaller cities gave up their protests already. People are saying that they're scared. The bigger cities, but not the capital, are also in really visible decline. If at the beginning of the movement there were maybe 20, 30,000 in certain places, right now the biggest demonstrations in the regions are maybe 500 people, something like that. In Minsk, the situation was developing a little bit different. In the last 2 months, the demonstrations were not dropping so drastically. So the first demonstrations that were happening in August, where on Sunday demonstrations were maybe 200,000 people, 300,000 people, plus the people that were in the regions. Now it dropped to, I think, last demonstration was maybe like 30,000 to 40,000 people. This is also happening because the repressions, after smashing the demonstrations in the regions, moved back to Minsk. And since, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, people are getting detained every time at the demonstration, or maybe even more. People are getting detained, and the number of the people who are getting detained is growing up. So yesterday, for example, a week before that, there were around 400 people detained. Yesterday, there were 700 people detained. So the repressions applied on the movement are growing up as well. And as a result of that, there is a little bit of this, from one side, we are not supposed to say we are kind of dropping in our momentum, but from the other side, we are trying to be realistic with what is going on the streets. So the call was there, and the people were supposed to meet at 2 o'clock in the city center, and the cops were there, of course. The cops are preparing hours before the whole thing starts, and they are actually controlling people hours before the whole meeting point. They bring their water cannons, their Canadian water cannons, they bring all the fancy toys they have, and it went in the way it went. So a bunch of people were detained even before people managed together. Then some critical crowds managed together. But the whole city center was basically like flooded with the cops. There was no way you can meet in certain parts of the city. And that's why a lot of people were gathering on, not really on the outskirts, but somewhere outside of the city center traditional meeting points. And that's how it transformed into this several columns all around the city that are marching and trying to meet with each other, which didn't work out. The cops used like rubber bullets. The cops used pepper spray. They used also water cannons. They used everything they could to disperse the crowds. And at certain point, we could say that it worked. It worked in the way that people didn't manage to meet for this huge demonstration. People didn't manage to meet in the city center, which was happening before. And people left in this huge crowd to get dispersed hours later somewhere on the outskirts. So this happened during the day. It was a fucking horrible weather. It was raining the whole day. It was, I mean, everybody were wet. Even the fucking pigs were wet. But people were also wet, so it was really exhausting. And by the time people were dispersed or left, it was some kind of, okay, whew, the day's over. Maybe we didn't win this day, but at least we can go home because we are so fucking tired. And Minsk is not, you know, the small town where you can walk from one side to another in an hour or something like that. It's like 25, 30 kilometers marches and so on. But parallel to that, there was a certain feeling that this shouldn't be the end. This shouldn't be happening and we are not going to give up. And, first call started coming actually from the anarchist kind of corner saying, hey, while people are getting dispersed in the city center, just get to the streets on your in your district, starts blocking the streets, starts creating like a fuss in the city. And this is talking about Minsk, because in the regions, there was not so much happening. And this call was caught up by the bigger, let's say, social media channels. And at the end of the day, the call was to meet at 9 o'clock in the evening all around the city, start blocking the streets, barricade, building barricades and stuff like that. And there was a lot of skepticism because there is a massive presence of this, we don't want to break the law feeling inside of the protests. But I think surprising to many, including the cops, people went. And in Minsk, there were several thousands all in all on the streets, several thousands not together, but there were smaller kind of pots all around the city with hundreds of people who were on the streets. There were burning barricades in at least one part of the city. In the other parts, people were bringing just garbage on the streets and trying to build up some improvised barricades out of what was there available. There were even benches. It was really comfortable. You could bring, I mean, benches in Minsk are also really hardcore stuff. You have like two concrete blocks, basically, and between them, there is like a wooden part. So they're super heavy and they are basically like an anti-terror blocks that are existing in Western Europe right now against the Islamists. This thing was there in my whole life growing up, you know. And it was not planned against terrorists. It was there to sit on it. So this was happening, and this was happening for hours. The cops, the wet, the tired cops, the same way as the wet and tired protesters, went to their barracks. And they were, I think they were all happy and thought, yeah, we won. The day is over. One more week and those fuckers are gone from the streets. And then suddenly, all around the city, there is this movement going on. People are meeting, people are blocking the streets, people are just starting actually to get the energy back of the movement. And this worked greatly. I mean, it raised the spirit. So by the end of the day, I don't know, end of the day, I mean like 12 o'clock in the night, everybody were having this this momentum of like, fuck them. We like fought back and we won the day back. So, and this was a really important part of the protest as well, not to go back home with this destroyed way. So that was yesterday. That was the last Sunday protests in Minsk. And what was really awesome is that in some cities, people managed to gather together in the evening, although they didn't manage to get together during the day. because of the police repressions. So the cops were gone from the streets and they're like, oh, fuck, let's meet. And then there was this, for example, Lida, which is a really small town with maybe 50,000 people living there. And they marched with several hundred people on the streets and they were like, yeah, the streets are ours, the city is ours. It worked awesome. It was a really great evening and really inspiring for the next days to come, I think.
All right. That sounds good. But most of the stuff that I've heard on the news, on TV, and that I've heard on the radio was pretty brutal, as I already said in the beginning. The police violence was pretty bad. And how did the protesters manage to survive this? How did they react? How many were detained yesterday? And how did the police react in the end when this new movement of barricading the streets started? Did they do anything or were they perplexed?
Talking about police brutality, it's worth mentioning what happened like in the first days, right? In the first days, it was fucking crazy. The people who were detained, they were raped, they were tortured, they were completely destroyed in the police stations. So getting arrested doesn't mean that, okay, now you can lay in the bed in the police station. It means that for the next 10, 12, 24 hours, you are going to be tortured. And this was the violence that provoked the protests that are happening still right now. A lot of people joined the movement because of the violence that the police exercised in the first days of protests. And they understood that as well. So the whole regime understood what is going on and that the violence, the direct violence that is applied on protesters is not going to stop, but rather provoke people for protest. And since then, since like middle of August, the amount of police violence was dropping. Not say like it was not there at all. People were still beaten up. There were news coming up of the people who were killed during the protest times. But the concentration of the violence was not so high. So for people, the police violence was something like fading away, slowly fading more and more away. And yesterday it came back in a really intense way. Because a lot of people had, for example, smashed heads from the police batons. A lot of people were brutally detained in the sense of like you're put on the ground, you're already not going to move at all. And then comes like 30, 40 riot cops in there, start beating you up because they can and because they are fucking full of adrenaline and maybe some drugs and they just go full on you. So there was a lot of violence and a lot of documented violence as well. So there were videos, photos all around. But this violence was also not really something that completely paralyzed the people. In many cases, people were going full scale on police, like fist fights again and beating up the cops and trying to de-arrest the people. So this kind of events were happening all around the city as well. In most of the cases, this was like skirmishes. It was not like 100 police against 100 protesters, one against one, rather than where the cops are really in the smaller groups and they feel brave and they can feel that they can arrest one person out of 500. There, the people start beating up the cops and the cops run away. So this was also an important part for like this momentum that we can protect ourselves, because this arresting moments all around the demonstration where the cops can pick up anybody they want is also quite demoralizing for a lot of people who want to join the demonstrations, but they see, okay, I'm not really safe in those demonstrations because a lot of people are not ready to protect your own fellow protesters. So this was happening as well all around the city. And what was important for this, I don't know, collective spirit is that although 700 people, and I'm just repeating myself, 700 people were arrested at that evening, a lot of people went on the streets again afterwards. And with police completely lost during these hours of the night protest, they were, I think there was a lot of confusion, They didn't know how to deal with that. They didn't know what to do. They knew how to deal with the bigger demonstrations. They got adopted. They kind of got used to this 2 months of protests. They know how to deal with a crowd of 5, 10, 20, 30,000 people. And they have tactics for that. But they had no fucking clue how to go in some suburbs of the city where most probably they were never there in their buses and try to arrest people in some dark, fucking horrible alleys where the people are most probably carrying knives and they're going to cut your throats. I don't know what is happening in their heads. But there is a lot of kind of, let's say, unannounced danger for the police in these situations in the sense of they don't know how many people are there. So if they're coming with two buses and there are 200 people, they're going to get destroyed. That's why, for example, the mobilization was so slow in Minsk in the first hours, because they were concerned, they were afraid that is going, what is going to happen to them. And it kind of worked. In the certain places they came as a kind of a, you know, brave knights that are going to save the situation, and people threw stones at them and destroyed their vans. There are videos right now of the police cars that were destroyed yesterday. And this is like, I mean, being an anarchist, it is kind of like a warming thing to see the police cars that are kidnapping people every day destroyed. It's nice. But this is something that not only anarchists are cheering. Everybody's cheering that. Everybody's seeing those cars and they think those fucking cars should be destroyed. And this is, to be precise, cars like Volkswagen and Ford that are supplying the Belarusian dictatorship with infrastructural things. So the cops were lost, confused. I think they were really frustrated and they didn't know what to do. But doesn't take so much time, I think, to adapt your strategy to deal with those smaller skirmishes as well, because they could see, okay, there are no thousands of people who are going to kill them and eat their children or whatever.
I think also the fact that the cops gave really a lot of efforts in destroying people's cars in the last weeks motivated people to kind
destroy
of
back.
Destroy back. I was wondering... from one hand, yeah, you said it at the beginning, the violence was really, really strong. I think you all heard about it. And then you just described that it kind of faded away, but is still present. What is the strategy of the society to deal with this kind of violence? I just remember that yesterday there was another video published directly out of the police station where you could actually really see the cops, like you really could see which cops were beating whom. And are there any pressure people actually do right now with this, all these videos and all this information they're gathering?
Well, there is a huge database of the cops who were committing some crimes or who were not committing crimes. But all in all, the consensus is that if you're still a cop after 2 months of this protest, you are basically part of the fucking crime gang. And there is a huge database of that. Thousands of cops with their addresses and names and maybe even cars. And this database is also visualized in the map. So people know where the cops are living. And there is an idea to build a pressure on the police through that. And it happens. There are sometimes, from time to time, police cars burning. I mean, not police cars, but the private car of the cop burning somewhere or getting painted or whatever. So those kind of like single direct actions are happening. And this is one of the ways to put pressure on the police. And it's super effective, actually, because the cops are what we call in Russian, like their heads are getting bumped. You know, they're just getting crazy about that because they are eventually can do what they do through the certain part of anonymity. If you know who the cop is, which cop is beating you up or beating up your friends or whatever, and this went really badly, you just go to that fucker and destroy everything he has. So this is like a, let's say, fear tactic. So the anonymizing the cops, the anonymizing the whole repression infrastructure and making it pretty much visible to everybody. The other part is a lot of, let's say, humanitarian support. There is a lot of psychologists who are working for free with the people who experienced violence. There is a possibility to leave the country for a certain period of time just to stay away from all everything that is happening. And a lot of people left actually because of the police violence. But there is no, like, let's say, society strategy. There are certain groups that are creating certain answers to the repressions, and those things are whether accepted or not, depending on the people. Right. Also, I mean, apart from the police, the repressions are happening also, for example, against the workers who are trying to strike. And for that, there is like a solidarity fund for the workers that is paying them if they're getting fired or they're on strike and they're not getting paid, and so on and so forth. So I think like money support is one of those ways, one of those things that is the easiest for the people to organize and to kind of comprehend how you can help people just pay for their food or whatever. And then there is a lot of solidarity on the streets. It's really interesting that a lot of people, for example, are opening the doors of their houses so the people who are running away from the cops can run into their houses and stay there and kind of hide the period of time from the police. Or certain smaller cafes and businesses are doing the same. So they would let like 20, 30, 50, 100 protesters inside and then lock the door, which was like part of a actually provoked a funny story. A chief of the criminal police and a special department, an elite police that is dealing with organized crime and the political groups and so on. They were running around the city with they look like a fucking bandits because they are in their head. So they had like batons and just a plain clothes, jeans and shit. And they saw that there was a group of people who ran into the cafe, and then they ran into this cafe and the door was closed. So what they did, I mean, many cops just turn around and go, but they are like elite forces, so they don't stop. I think the guy felt like he's in a fucking action movie. So he just took the baton and started smashing the door of the cafe, broke everything completely. And then they detained a couple of people inside, and it became kind of a really, you know, the accumulation of how stupid and how ridiculous the situation is when this kind of like a special forces are running around, smashing the window, smashing the doors of the cafes, dragging some protesters and so on and so forth.
So this was, I know, with the last day of dictator, I know as a Belarusian punk band. We were talking a lot right now about the repression going on in Belarus and how actually the level of violence developed, which strategies against the repression people have. So I would like to talk a little bit about general strategies people actually developed right now. So there were a lot happening in the last 2 months. And maybe you could introduce some of the strategies people actually started to develop. You already mentioned strike and solidarity on the streets. Maybe you can get a little bit deeper into that.
I think since the 2 months, the Belarusian society went through applying all or trying to apply as many tactics as you can find on the internet, right? Like of peaceful resistance, let's call it like that. It started with this peaceful marches against the violence with the flowers and white clothes and so on and so forth. Then the strike wave started as well, which didn't last so long. Then the students were called for striking, which didn't turn into a strike, but students are still participating in the protests. So since I think the 1st of September was the call for the strike, the student strike, which didn't work out so well, but there were a couple of thousands of people on the streets at that point. And since then, people are still going to the universities, they're still studying, but at the end of the studying day, they would gather together several hundred people at the exit of the university. They sing songs, they sit on the stairs of the university and maybe march somewhere around the place. That's what happens with the youth saying so, like that. Then as the repressions increased and people were pushed more and more away from the streets, they moved to the neighborhoods, to the like inner yards of the bigger neighborhoods where the organization started as well. So right now there are a lot, there are hundreds of neighborhood assemblies all around Minsk and bigger cities that are meeting more or less on the regular basis. In many cases, they are meeting not for making Molotov cocktails and burning the barricades and shit. They are meeting to do some cultural things. They're listening to the music together. There are some musicians coming for the evening for the into the neighborhood and so on and so forth, or watching a movie. So it's not like a, let's say, political assemblies that are talking about how we are going to bring down the government. Some of them are. Some of those assemblies are highly politicized. I mean, there are several neighborhoods where people were like, okay, we need to rent a place where we can sit down for hours and have like a proper meeting and talk through what is our next steps and so on and so forth. And those people are not anarchists or liberals or whoever you can imagine doing that. This is like the people who were not involved in politics 3 months ago. And they are like finding, okay, we read this and this books, we read this and this articles on the internet. We know that now is the time for us to get organized, and they're getting organized. So this neighborhood assemblies, I think, is now the biggest organizational effort so far, apart from the Sunday's demonstrations, which are less organized in the sense of why are we there, who is there, but more like crowds of people gathering together. So this is happening as well. The anarchists are also an interesting group of people inside of the protests. It is a really legendary, mythical animals that are going on the streets and they, you know, shoot the lasers against the police. They have 10 arms and they can destroy the police cars and shit like that. Honestly, like, the anarchist movement, since the beginning of the protest, became a certain myth that was partly supported by the anarchist movement itself, but mostly is actually a mythos that exists in the society, that people in black are like bulletproof and they are the most important part. They think that those people know what they're doing, right? Which is sometimes true, sometimes not, depending on the situation. And so this notion of the anarchists and this notion of the direct action is also spreading inside of the society. A lot of people are asking, like, how can I join the anarchists? How I can become an anarchist? I want to be an anarchist. I want to have a stone in my hand and be an anarchist and shit like that. And I think, like, this kind of a simplistic perception of the anarchist movement is happening in the first days, in the first months or whatever. But there are more and more people understanding, okay, the anarchists are not going to give me a passport of anarchist and I will join their party rather than I have to do it myself. And this is an important shift inside of the society again. Because, I mean, there were a lot of shifts inside of the Belarusian society. First, the notion of the great savior that is going to liberate all of us from the dictatorship, gone, right? The crowds of the hundreds of thousands of people on the streets that are going to scare the fucker so much that he's going to run away. This notion, gone. This myth is gone, right? And more comes this understanding, we have to do ourselves and extraordinary things to make the extraordinary things happen. So the anarchists are kind of this pushing mechanism, you know, like, yeah, you can do it yourself. You can do it, right? We can do it together with you. Like, for example, yesterday there was a column of people that, I mean, didn't get lost but couldn't reach the biggest column. All in all, maybe 1,000 people walking around the city center and trying to avoid the police. And inside of it, there was like a group of maybe 30, 40 anarchists with the drums, with the samba band. And this was like, for a lot of people, wow, these people are organized. They have a banner. They have like black flag. They have drums. And they are not running from the police when the police comes, which we all do. So that was what's happening, you know, like, maybe 20, 30 cops coming from the yard, from the inner yard. Everybody runs away. The group stays. Everybody's like, oh, whoa, whoa. And then comes back to the drums because drums are a really important part of this unionizing, you know. And everybody were like, wow, the anarchists are so awesome. They can collect us back. You know, we don't only run. We are getting back together. We are cool. And then people are running because the cops are from behind. And then the anarchists are stopping at the crossroad and saying, oh, we have to wait for the people behind. And everybody's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We can wait for the people behind. Let's wait for the people behind, right? So all of this is kind of like a really simple things for the people in Germany and people in Western Europe or people wherever the demonstrations are happening. But in Belarus, this kind of like, oh, we can interact with the people on the streets is like, wow. And this was, I think, a positive experience, not only for the people, but also for the anarchist groups. Because there was a lot of tension between the peaceful protesters and the anarchists from time to time. And at that point, it was clear, like, whoa, the anarchists are the thing. And then, yeah, this is something that is developing for last 2 months. And hopefully it will continue developing. And then suddenly, by the end of the year, Belarus will be an anarchist republic. But apart from that, there is also initiative of the drivers, which started from the very beginning, and they are also a radical, lovely people who are having a gorgeous sense of humor, a really offensive one, which I love. So they are trying to organize drivers, you wouldn't get surprised about that, to block the streets, to get the people with the cars on the bigger streets in Minsk or around the country and just block the movement of the police and create like huge fuss inside of the town. And also they are organizing these great solidarity possibilities for the people to leave the demonstrations, to leave the protest places by car. So they would call, okay, you go there, you pick up as many people as you can and drive away so they don't have to wait for the public transport, which is not working at the time. And they are successful and not successful at certain times. People are afraid. The cops that are went crazy in the first days against the cars as well. So destroying the cars and then destroying the people inside of the cars created an image for a lot of people to keep the distance. But at the moments when the concentration of the protest is going up, people dare. People still dare to protest. People still dare to block the streets or picking up the people from the protests. And this is working. Like, this is one of the greatest examples of solidarity that is happening in Belarus right now. Right.
All right. This sounds crazy. It sounds like a lot of empowerment and protesting culture learning is going on. And people are unifying. That is kind of what I'm hearing right now. So my question now is, now with all that is happening with properties and names of officials in the, well, abating and helping the dictatorship are being published, and there's people ask for repercussions for these people. Is the plan to win over the police, to scare them or make them understand that it's not the right way to go, the way they have been going for the past couple of years or decades, better to say? Because there's another thing that we found out today is that now the police in Belarus got the permission to shoot with actual ammunition on, well, people in the streets, protesters. And a thing that I could imagine is if I was a police officer, as much as I would be an asshole to actually kill somebody, is maybe, could that be a way of making them understand that what they're doing is useless? Or do you think the police is lost and there's nothing happening there?
You, just to make it clear, you're not calling people to kill the police, or you are? I didn't get the question.
No, definitely not. I'm not calling anybody. Okay. I'm just saying that...
I'm not going to judge if you're calling for that. I'm not part of any structure that is going. I think the situation depends on who you ask. Like, the perspective depends on who you ask. Because there are certain groups of liberals who believe that after certain possibilities open for the police, after certain pressure built on the police, the cops will quit and they will become these fluffy animals that are going to hug everybody and everything will be lovely. And there is even this fund that was started also by some liberal groups to assist the cops that quit their jobs, which was quite a big deal at the first week of the protest, when the pressure from the protest was so big and the conflicts was going on so intense that the cops had to decide whether they're participating in the whole violence or not. And back then, a lot of cops quit. But right now, as being a cop, being a pig in Minsk or in Belarus is of no danger mostly to you. Like, nobody, I mean, sure, somebody will burn your car maybe, but the possibility of that is lower than maybe you dying from the thunderstorm. So the cops are not feeling any danger. The cops are not feeling pressed into quitting their jobs. And that's why I don't think that this is in any way possible that they are going to choose the side of the people. This is happening only when the power of the people is so overwhelming over the police that they feel they are in danger of not losing their jobs. They are in danger of their life. And that's when they flip. That's when not one, two, three cops flip, but that's when the whole institution says, okay, we are not going to support Lukashenko. What is happening also, what is important or crucial to understand inside of Belarusian state police, is one of the most privileged groups of society. They are the people who are retiring 20 years younger than most of the workers. They are the people who are getting state-financed flats with like some credits, or maybe even without the fucking credit. So they are like getting flats, they are getting super a lot of privileges, their salary is above the average in comparison to other working people, although they're not really working so much. So for them, losing the regime, losing the great leader, means not only losing some abstract notion of the statehood and their role in the statehood, but rather losing the privileges that they have in the society, because they understand that after the reforms, half of them will be gone and so on and so forth. And also the prosecution of the police for all the crimes that happened in the last 2 months is of a bigger threat than the decision, okay, we're going to flip the boat, we're going to switch the boat, we're going to jump to the liberal boat, and so on. So there is a lot of fear there as well. And that all in all motivates the police to be as fucked up as they are. And the reason why the cops were not exercising violence in the last 2 months as much as yesterday or 2 months ago is not because they understood the value of the human life and the human health, and they said, okay, fuck what we did, rather than Lukashenko and his government said, you can't do that right now. You are not allowed to destroy people right now. And through these 2 months, the leash that they were put on was getting longer and longer and longer. And what happened yesterday was kind of like, not really, you know, roam free, but somewhere out there. What is also important is that a lot of liberals are calling to prosecution of the police within the current system. So they are really unhappy with the state prosecutor office that is not starting criminal cases against those who killed people and so on and so forth. It seems that there is a lack of understanding how the power works inside of the state. And it works not only in Belarus like that, it works all around the fucking world. That police has a certain carte blanche on doing things the way they do. And if they are facing the threat of prosecution, if they're facing the threat of, okay, maybe I shot someone today, or maybe I beat up someone today, then this uncertainty for every step that you are doing in prosecuting people, in repressing people, would lead to the situation where the cops wouldn't do anything anymore. And to use the police violence effectively, you need to give this carte blanche. You need to give the possibility for the cops to kill people. You need to give the possibility for the cops to just basically beat them up in prisons. And even maybe Lukashenko doesn't agree with that because he's a cool guy who doesn't beat up the lame men and so on. Maybe he doesn't agree with that. But this is nobody cares about, because they are consolidated in their power and they are getting full support of the power of the government. And nobody's going to trade the couple of the policemen for the liberal reforms or whatever, because when you start trading one, then the three or five, four or 1,000 will run away because they are afraid that they will be the next.
Кое-кто там говорит честно. Мы провели выборы. Пока вы меня не убьете, других выборов не будет.
Да свобода заменителя, что нам могут предложить, выбирать, под кем нам жить, так и давят год от года, всем, кто выбор не свобода, сколько ж можно нам еще подставлять под них плечо, эти выборы подстава, выбирать имеем право. И клише, а из идей, что в душе, восстание шум воскреснет, сгинь обреченность и скука, здесь грянут новые песни, проверкой грядущего звука, и пусть прошлые двери закроются. Революцию не надо ждать, к ней надо готовиться. Наш выбор – свобода. Наш выбор – свобода. Наш выбор – свобода. Если жив свободный дух, то зачем тебе пастух? Целый мир перед тобой, быть рабом – какой отстой. Чтоб остановить режим, надо делать все самим. Будем твердо это знать, никто не сможет помешать. По-другому дальше жить, слово взять и заявить от лица всего народа.
по улицам катится ночь, покалеченная ОМОНом. Но нас не заставят молчать, задохнувшись беззвучным стоном. Диктатура уйдет, время не остановится. Революцию не надо ждать, к ней надо готовиться. Наш выбор – свобода. 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 Наш выбор – свобода.
This was Electro Partisan from Petersburg. They wrote a song to the protest in Belarus.
Okay, so now the question really is, what are the future plans for the movement? What are the things the movement wants? What is the best outcome that could come from everything that is happening right now? And what we found out was that Lukashenko actually himself went to a prison to talk with people of the opposition, whatever that is supposed to be, because it seems like everybody is part of the opposition right now, except of Lukashenko and his police. So, yeah, what is going on there, and what is the future going to be?
I mean, going to prison, there was a joke that he was checking the best cell for himself, but it was not clear why the fuck on earth he went there. For sure, it's like a selling picture for whether he's Russian partners or for European Union, because European Union wants the release of political prisoners. And if Lukashenko gets like a the conflict level of the oppositional members, like the big figures of the protest, then he can play back the European Union and then everybody will be happy. And he actually released a couple of people from that who were completely sold out. I mean, they started saying that the protest doesn't make any sense and we are going to participate in the constitutional reform right now and so on and so forth. While some other people said, most probably, fuck off and go and fuck yourself. And so it didn't work out so well. The media reported, the state media reported, I think, like a video of 2 minutes, which although the whole meeting was half an hour, and they said that the meeting was not really going well, like in the sense of not everybody listens to the great leader and agrees and so on, rather than it was actually arguing with each other. Right. So the meeting was a puff all in all, and which is something that Lukashenko tries to do a lot. Create some media events that are not making any sense, but they are eaten by the people. Not by the people, but mostly by the media. So instead of reporting on the protest, instead of reporting on the development of the protest, people are reporting on Lukashenko jumping out of helicopter or going to the prison or something like that.
It was even in the German news.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was really hard for the Belarusian people to end up in the German news after fighting with the cops for several days. But for Lukashenko, it was so easy to get on the German news. It's just jumping out of the helicopter with the Kalashnikov. So the future, as we see it, is of course like an optimistic one where in heads of some people, Lukashenko is getting arrested and there is the tribunal against him and he's all surrounding. In my head, Lukashenko is dead and his all fucking crazy ministers and shit are gone to Russia where the revolution is happening in the next half a year and they're all going to North Korea and so on and so forth. So we are like a mass uprising of the people who were suppressed in the Soviet Union, finally raise against the dictatorship and fuck them all. Which is a dream. A dream comes true sometimes, sometimes not. And in reality, we don't know. We don't know what is going to happen next because, as we can see, the repressions are quite successful. Repressions are successful in at least destroying the movement in the smaller regions, in the smaller cities. How it will develop in Minsk is also not clear. And it's all like a, like this momentums, like it's a roller coaster where they win one day and the other day we win and so on and so forth for the next weeks. But we all really fucking dream of this moment when he's gone and we are all happy people and we are going to dance for days.
And maybe for our listeners, last short question, which kind of support people need right now?
Oh, there is a lot of support that can be done, but support, shortly, yeah. money, give your money, give 10% of your salary, 20% of your salary to the cause. The Anarchist Black Cross is collecting money. The several other anarchist groups are collecting money for street activity, for media activity or whatever, buying cameras and shit. Everything costs money. So money. Give your money and give your solidarity. Do solidarity actions. Do some solidarity actions next to the embassy. I'm not calling for anything, but for example, in Petersburg, there were people in 2010 who occupied the Belarusian embassy, and it was a great solidarity. So your solidarity should be limited only by your imagination. Just do some crazy actions that everybody notices and that are builds pressure on Lukashenko and not just symbolism. Though symbolism is good. But money.
Okay. So money it is. Okay. So thanks a lot.
Oh, and thanks.
Thanks.
We've heard that NATO is like bringing all the support. And by the way, if this is listened to by the CIA agents that are sponsoring the Belarusian revolt by the words of some crazy Trotskyist communists who are talking about all this shit. So if you hear that, we need money.
Okay, so money it is. Okay, thanks a lot that you were here today and were sharing all your thoughts on this. This was Elephant in the Room, and we're going to hurry listen to each other in 2 weeks. So hate Mondays, stay organized, and be cool. Ciao.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.